You know, we can't do Yeah, it's good to be on time.
They're still finishing up the broadcasting of the Bingo, and at 11 is the PGI that was scheduled for 10 o'clock. You will bring the documents in. Yeah, this is just a meeting.
Go to the Texas group today, or?
Okay, thank
you.
Probably, that's the committee. Yes.
Gracias. to the president, wishing ending up with all that combined. Well, we were just worried about the human stuff. And the wife got this team to work out it. Well, if I had the power of the world, I would quickly have my own
information.
Yeah. I mean, we use some renewable packages of electricity.
Just for the sake of clarity, the document that I will be constantly referring to is the one with the heading Portfolio Committee Amendments to Consumer Protection Bill. At the bottom left of the page, there is a number from 19 capital C of 2008. That is the document reflecting all the amendments that were agreed upon by the
committee. Can we ascertain as whether all of us have this document, the legal status of it, so that we don't have some difficulties in the process? Are we all having it?
B-19,
yes? 2008. Oh, okay. what I would have left, I think we'll do a forum. Thank you very much. Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Needless to say, another document has also been made available, which is a thicker document, and that one at the bottom left of the page says Bill 19, capital D. Bill 19, capital D. This is the bill incorporating all the amendments that we find in Bill 19C. So if we read Bill 19, capital D, all these amendments would already have been incorporated into the policy.
Now, another bill we will be dealing with, Bill 19D 2008. Do we all have it?
No.
Yeah, I think there are some cookies around. We can just share. Is that the one, Mr. Sema? No? Okay. Honorable Gordon, do you have one? Mr. Sema, do you have one?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Sema.
Honorable Chair? Thank you very much. We can continue.
Thank you, Chair. And please indulge just another sentiment, if you don't mind, Chair. Needless to say, we are here aware of our duty to be fair to the committee, to fairly reflect all these amendments, and to give whatever explanations we might need to this, and we would not, for a moment, even shy away from that responsibility. But may I make a suggestion, Chair? That C bill, 19 capital C, as we can see, is a fairly lengthy document. It runs into 9 pages, and it contains quite a number of amendments. May I seek your permission, Chair, to go through that document, clause by clause, but deal with the amendments that are substantive or material in nature. Needless to say, some of these amendments, as we all know by now better than I do, are like minor amendments, technical, full legal technical alterations to the bill, and it takes time to refer to that. So with your permission, if we can run through the material, substantive amendments, needless to say, once we've done that, and some of the members would like to ask questions in respect of small amendments that we did not deal with, we will gladly then respond here. I'm just thinking in the interest of time. We will deal in fairness with all the material amendments contained in the document.
There's a request from members that we concentrate on those amendments that have been some impacting on the substantive contents of the bill. Those that are for refinement, if you like, or not affecting the contents, we might raise issues at the end if we feel like. But for now, we deal with the ones that contain, I mean, that affect the content directly. Can we put it that way? Honorable colleague?
Yes, I really agree.
It is in order, sir. You can proceed in the manner you suggested. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for your indulgence, Chair. I will then straight away refer to Bill 19C, the amendment. And allow me then to turn to page 2 of that bill. The very first heading is the long title, minor amendments there. The second one is the preamble. And the first material amendments are to be found under clause 1. I will refer to all those numbers under clause 1 as items. So as we can see there in clause 1, we have 5 separate items. And I would like to deal with item number 1 and item number 2 collectively. This relates to the definition in the bill. That is on page 9 of our bill. It relates to the definition of electronic communication. It says electronic communication means communication by means of electronic transmission, including by telephone, fax, SMS and then Bluetooth, wireless computer access, email and website, internet connection, or any similar technology or device. So all of those means of communication would then satisfy the definition of electronic communication. But also in the bill there's another definition of direct marketing, which says that direct marketing means to approach a person, either in person or by mail or electronic communication. So there is the word electronic communication again. So the sentiment was that if we look at, for instance, Bluetooth and website and internet connection as being part of the definition of electronic communication, then it makes the concept or the definition of direct marketing too wide. That those should be omitted from the definition of electronic communication, just to constrain the definition of direct marketing slightly. Chair, the next one is that I will deal with is clause 2 of the bill. Clause 2 of the bill, it is on page 14. That is page 14 now of the amended bill, the one incorporating the amendment. And I will deal first of all with item 1. It relates to clause 2 sub 9. Clause 2 sub 9 is on page 14 of the amended book. That's the new book. It's there in line, starts in line 50. What it says in subsection 9 is that if there is inconsistency between the provisions of this Act, the Consumer Protection Act, and possibly the provisions of an act in respect of another regulated authority. If there are inconsistency between the two, then there should be an attempt to apply both of them in an harmonious manner to try and reconcile or marry the inconsistency. But it goes on to say that if it's impossible to reconcile the inconsistency, and if the protection that is provided by this Act, by the Consumer Act, is bigger than the protection provided by the Act regulating the other regulatory industry, then this Act providing the bigger protection should apply. So clearly the principle is this. If better protection is provided for a consumer in terms of this Consumer Protection Act, then this Act must be valid, obviously, so that we can better protect the consumers. But then it was pointed out to us by the chemical industry that given the hazardous nature of chemicals, that this provision should be amended in respect of their specific industry. And there is the amendment is on page 14 and it starts from line 36. It is a proviso that says, provided that in the case of hazardous chemical products, only the provisions of this Act relating to consumer readers will apply. So what it means is that the technical aspects should rather be left with the specialist departments or other regulatory industries. But the consumer portion of this Act will apply based on Chair, the very next one is item 2 under clause 2, and there it is, the very next subsection, the subsequent subsection 9. It says that no provision of this Act must be interpreted so as to preclude a consumer from exercising any rights afforded in terms of common law. The idea of this amendment is to make it very clear that whereas this bill would provide a number of new rights for consumers to exercise, it should be very clear that irrespective of those rights. None of them should be construed as to preclude a consumer from exercising any right that he or she might exercise in terms of the common law. It is merely just to very expressly state that sentiment. Chair, I then move on to the next one, and if you just allow me to the proper quarter, Chair. Thank you, Chair. The next one is under Clause 5. Clause 5 is Item 2 of our amendment. It's on page 2 there. It says that this Act does not apply to any transaction in terms of which goods or services are promoted or supplied to the state. We dealt with this principle that the state, being this very, very big consumer, should not be afforded the protection provided for by this bill. But why we have this amendment, in certain instances, at the request of the state, certain goods might be supplied, for instance, to an organ hospital or to some institution within the parameters of the state. And because that consumer is not so big as the state, the protection provided for by this bill should also be provided for those smaller, those consumers within the ambit of the state, possibly all of the state, they should be afforded the protection provided for by this law. The previous law did not contain that provision. So the state is excluded from protection provided here, but smaller organs within the ambit of the state, they are afforded the protection provided for here. And then in B, in 2B, we also see that this Act does not apply to any transaction in terms of which the consumer is a juristic person whose asset value or annual turnover at the time of the transaction equals or exceeds the threshold values determined by the minister in terms of Section 6. It is more or less the same principle that applies in respect of the state. If a juristic person, such as a big private company, they have the means, they have the money, they have access to legal services and the rest. So clearly, these huge big companies should not be afforded the protection provided for by this bill. The next one is Item 2, Chair, and this one relates to the clause in the bill dealing with the application of the Act. Item 2 there is saying on page 16 after line 52 and the next. If we refer to the amended bill there, we will see the following. This Act does not, it is subsection 2 or subclause 2 under clause 5, it's page 16 of the bill. This Act does not apply to any transaction, and then we've got these new categories here. It does not apply to any transaction that constitutes a credit agreement, because that falls under the National Credit Act, or giving effect or pertaining to services to be supplied under an employment contract, there we deal with the Labor Relations Act, or an agreement giving effect to a collective bargaining agreement within the meaning of Section 23 of the Constitution. Once again, we see the reference to the Labor Relations Act. Or giving effect to a collective agreement as defined in Section 213 of the Labor Relations Act. Most of these amendments were presented by Sutton, saying that there is no need for the Act to apply in these specific instances. Chair, the next material amendment is to be found under Clause 13. If we look at Clause 13 in the bill, on page 21 of the bill, it is that clause dealing with what we call the bundling of services. To put it very simplistically, the bundling of services would occur if, I would say, for instance, to a consumer that can buy this bottle from me, but in the process of buying this bottle from me, you should also maybe consider buying a stent from him, or maybe buying a stent from the lady sitting next to me. So I'm bundling these two groups in one transaction, and the bill does not allow that. Unless, of course, as we can see there under clause 13, it's in line 12, unless the supplier can show that the convenience to the consumer in having those goods so bundled would outweigh the limitation of the consumer's right to choice, or can show that the bundling of those goods or services results in economic benefits for the consumer, and there is a new insertion, or the supplier offers bundled goods or services separately and at an individual price. That is the amendment. So for me now to offer the bottle and the pen, I can offer them together, but then I must also offer them separately or individually at separate prices. That is the nature of the amendment, Chair. The next one is under clause 14. Under clause 14, it deals with transaction values again. If we refer to clause 14 on page 21 of our book, we can see that we're dealing there with the expiry and renewal of fixed term agreements, and there is a new insertion in the bill. 14 sub 1, page 21, line 25. This whole section in respect of fixed term agreements does not apply to transactions between juristic persons, regardless of their annual turnover or asset. The idea simply being that those companies shouldn't be afforded the protection provided by clause 14. Chair, I then move on to page 4 of our amendments, which is clause 24. Clause 24. Is to be found on page 28 of our bill. Page 28, clause 24, the heading being product labeling and trade description. And there we can see a new subsection being inserted, a new subsection 6 that says that any person who produces, supplies, imports, or packages any prescribed goods must display on or in association with the packaging of those goods a notice in a prescribed manner and form that discloses the presence of any genetically modified ingredient or component of those goods in accordance with applicable regulations. These are the GMOs that we've spoken about so much. So now it's very clear that in this respect, this kind of labelling must take place. Chair, the next substantive amendment is under clause 50. Under clause 50, it is rather simple. It says that if a consumer agreement between a supplier and the consumer is not in writing, the supplier must keep a record of transactions entered into over the telephone or any other recordable form as described. The intention merely being that because there is no writing that we can all see and read, then there must be some other form of recording so that the content of the transaction can be properly reflected. The next one is in clause 54, and if I maybe deal with clause 54 and 56 together, Chair, because they relate to the very same principle. The change that has been affected here is a fairly material change when it comes to the protection of consumers. In the previous bill, the provision was to be effected if a consumer would provide this bottle to a supplier, a supplier would provide this bottle to a consumer, and the consumer would be unhappy about the nature of the bottle, then the consumer can come back to the supplier, and the supplier can then elect either to repair the bottle so as to make it a proper product, or to refund the consumer the money paid in respect of the bottle. What these amendments under clause 54 and 56 would now do is to take that right of election away from the consumer and to grant that discretion from the supplier, and to grant that discretion to the consumer. So if there's something wrong now with the bottle, the consumer will approach the supplier and simply say, I've exercised my discretion in terms of these amendments, and would you please mind not to repair the bottle, but rather refund me my money. So the discretion is taken away from the next one here is clause 59, it's item 2. Clause 59 in our bill deals with the recovery and safe disposal of. It's clause 59 on page 47 of the bill. The heading is right at the bottom of page 47. The heading being recovery and safe disposal of designated products or components. And here is the amendment. If we read this clause, we will see that it provides for manners of disposing safely of all kinds of products. The amendment is there on page 5 of the amendment, clause 59, item 2. If any regulation or industry waste management approved by any other legislation for the management of a specific waste type applies, the consumer may dispose or deposit the goods to a collection facility provided for in the regulation for industry waste management. So the idea is really to give another option for the safe disposal of these kinds of products. Okay, the next one is clause 61 of our book. Page 48 in our bill, clause 61. In our previous bill, there was a subsection 61, sub 1. It's very short. Please allow me, for the sake of explaining the amendment, to read it, Chair, because this is now in the previous bill. It said that this section, this is the section, as we will see in our bill, liability for damage caused by goods, containing the principle of strict or absolute liability. So it's liability for damage caused by goods, and there was subsection 1 saying, this section does not apply to any genetically modified organisms regulated in terms of the genetically modified organisms. This amendment proposes that that subsection be deleted, meaning that this clause in the bill dealing with liability for damage caused by goods would also apply in respect of GMOs. Item 2 under clause 61 here is the second amendment pertaining to clause 61. Once again, if I can just refer the portion that's being deleted, it was very, very difficult language to understand. It was saying that liability would not apply if it's unreasonable to expect a person and it carries on, and then it refers to the state of scientific and technical knowledge at the time the goods were under the control of that person. It was pointed out that maybe in a world like this we shouldn't be dealing with the sort of language that is so difficult to understand, and the amendment is merely to the effect that those highly articulated words should be omitted from the wheelchair. The next substantive amendment is on page 6 of our amendment. It is clause 72. There was indeed a clause in the previous bill dealing with alternative distinction, but it was fairly short, and it was felt that it should be extended to provide better rights and more rights to a consumer when it comes to so-called ADR, alternative dispute resolution. We won't be reading it here, but what it boils down to is clearly we can now see that there is the right for a consumer to seek redress by way of alternative dispute resolution. And it also tells us that if there's no conclusion to that kind of resolution, then there are other possibilities, other avenues available to the consumer. For instance, to refer the complaint to the commission in accordance with Section 71. It also goes on to say that if there was indeed a resolution after ADR, then Subsection 3 provides certain possibilities for a consumer to follow. For instance, to record the resolution of that dispute in the form of an order, and also if the parties to the dispute consent to that order, to submit it to the tribunal or the High Court, to be made an order in terms of its rules. And then very importantly here, there we can see in sub 4, with the consent of a complainant, a consent order confirmed in terms of subsection 3b may include an award of damages to that complainant. We've been hearing every now and then, why don't we provide for aggrieved consumers to be awarded an amount of damages rather than having to approach the ordinary court of law, pay the money and lawyers and the rest. So there is another very important avenue that's being created for consumers. The next one, Chair, is Clause 74. Once again, it provides additional avenues for a consumer. It says that after hearing a motion for a consent order, the tribunal or a court must make an order as agreed to and proposed by the Commission and the respondent. Indicate any changes that must be made in the draft order before it will make the order or refuse to make the order. Those are the avenues that can be exhausted by the tribunal. Chair, the next one is Clause 87 of our law. Clause 87 is on page 61, and as we can see on the heading there, it says appointment of commissioner. But unfortunately, this was merely an oversight. In the previous bill, there was provision for the appointment of the commissioner, but no provision for the appointment of a deputy commissioner. And there we can now see clause 87, page 61 of the bill, in subsection 6. Line 30, page 61. The minister must appoint at least one person and may appoint other persons with suitable qualifications and experience in economics, law, commerce, industry, or public affairs as deputy commissioner. So, subsections 6 and 7 are new insertions to provide for the appointment of deputies as well. Clause 93, Chair, page 63 of our bill, there's a new subsection 2, clause 93. We're dealing here with development of codes of practice, and it simply says that these codes must be published for public comment. before finalized. The next one is source 110110. This is the addition of another statutory offence apart from the ones that we've already had there. The new statutory offences being created here are the following. If I can find my place here, it's page 69 of the book, right at the bottom. Page 69. It is an offence for any person to alter, obscure, they were there. Falsify was not. Remove was there. Omit was not. And labeling was not. So it's now also a statutory offence to falsify or to omit a displayed price. If a price must be displayed and it's not displayed, it must be a statutory offence. And even the labeling. If labeling applies and it's not there, the person would be committing a statutory offence and the concomitant penalties would apply. Okay, the next one, and we're getting closer to the end of the amendment, the next one is clause 119. Okay, you will recall that there was quite a substantial discussion on this one. This is purely a matter of law. My friend Ms. Kuleka Bija. Kuleka Bija is here. She was instrumental in pointing out this amendment to us. It's clause 119. I will just get briefly deal with that. So this is purely a matter of law. The previous bill had a provision saying the following. I'm sorry for paging around like this here, but I have no option. It said that an order certified, or it said that an order certified by the chairperson of the tribunal is conclusive proof of the contents of the order of the tribunal, unless the contrary is proof. We conceded that this might well be unconstitutional in that it amounts to shifting of the onus of proof, and it almost operates as a presumption against the accused, and it should be. It simply now says, once again, that order will have evidentiary value in a court of law, but the degree of that value will be lower in terms of this amendment. It now simply says, an order certified is 119, clause 119, page 72, page 72, paragraph B, an order certified by the chairperson of the tribunal is prima facie proof of the content of the order. But it's not conclusive, and it does not move the onus or the burden of proof to the accused. Chair, the next one is clause 120. Clause 120 is on page 72 of our book. It relates to the ministerial power to make regulations. And there is a new insertion. It's clause 120, paragraph D. The minister may make regulations relating to unfair, unreasonable, or unjust contract terms. This amendment, Chair, relates to the whole issue of the so-called grey list. It relates to clause 48 of the bill dealing with unfair, unreasonable, or unjust contract terms. There was a fairly strong sentiment in certain quarters that those unfair and unjust terms should be codified and they should be made part of this book. That everybody can see that if you put a term in a condition that is any one of these, then your contract would be unjust, it would be unfair. But we felt that that would make it difficult in the sense that the moment you've got those unjust and unfair terms codified in an Act of Parliament, every time there has to be a change to that, the legislative process would apply, and maybe there would be oversight and we would exclude some other terms that might also be unjust and unfair. So therefore, that the better approach would be rather to give this ministerial power to the minister, say that the minister can, by way of subordinately, by way of regulation, go about and publish certain terms and conditions that should not be part of contract because they reflect injustice or unfairness. It would also be easy to amend them from time to time and to add to them. Here I'm moving on to the very last one. That is, say what we're having under Schedule 1, we've got quite a number of amendments here, but like yesterday, these ones are all consequences. They do not cover any ice, they have no substance. They are simply consequential amendments in other acts so that they can be made consistent with the provisions of this act. The only substantive one is there in Schedule 2, page 9 of our amendments. Schedule 2, exclusion of certain laws. And it might be necessary for one of my colleagues just to fill me in here. There's a slight memory failure on this one. But what it says is that the exclusion of the Short-Term Insurance Act and the Long-Term Insurance Act, that exclusion will only be valid for a period of 18 months from the commencement of this act. If one of my colleagues could possibly assist me here.
Sure, you can. This related to the arrangement we reached with regard to these two pieces of legislation to state that they already deal with consumer protection issues, and they are combatant in those sectors, the financial sector, that enforce consumer protection issues. So there's no need to tell about that because already there's a redress system that is in place currently. So to the extent that, and they are fairly new legislation, the short-term and long-term insurance act. So to the extent that there are some gaps in those two pieces of legislation, we allow the relevant department to bring in line those two pieces of legislation with the protection provided in this bill. So we are saying we'll give them effectively 18 months once this bill has been promulgated, 18 months to then bring those two pieces of legislation in line with the protection provided in this bill. If they fail to do so, that's what it says, if they fail to do so, this bill will then apply in those sectors. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Ted. Ted, if I could leave it that for the time being. Once again, Ted, any of the amendments that we skipped over, we will gladly respond to. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah, I think it would be unfair of me to just express an ordinary thank you. I need to express a specific thank you because what has been done in a specific sense, within a specific context, for a specific people. I think the DDG did us a very great favor to acceding to our request, and on top of that, the state law advisor accepted the request through the DG, and I think that has been very brilliant. I mean, I know the DTI always do things in a particular, but this time, it is a particular way of the particular ways. Thank you very, very much. And we saved a lot of time, and you did what you have been here for, and I think anything outside that would be not only unfair, but actually uncalled for. At this note, can I invite members of REFS? Oh, yeah, I think I can invite members to raise issues, including those issues that might pertain to some of the topics which were not referred to, not because they're not important, but because they do not have anything substantive in terms of the impact of the amendments they are. I have recognized Honorable Teblar. I think for the time being, she's the only one who is in the next one.
Thanks, Gabriel. I just want clarity on procedure. This bill came from, was it 8076 bill? We dealt with it? bring to the NA some amendments were made. Isn't it correct to say that these amendments must also be concurred by the provinces, that they must also now see these amendments before we as a committee today deliberate on them? I would just like some of the state law advisors to emphasize on that before I go on with the other question that I have. Am I correct that the province has to look at the amendments again, in other words, and that the email just didn't read us? Because it is a 76 bill. Okay, and then further, if we have to go back then to the provinces, I would like to request, because on the back of the bill on page 92, I see the departments that have been consulted. There's Department of Social Housing, Development, Housing, Transport and Health, Provincial Department of Finance and Economic Affairs, and the SA Law Commission, but I don't see the Department of Agriculture. And the specific reference to section 24, the point 6 that is inserted, I think it's just fair and proper, especially since there were wide consultations, to also consult the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture on that specific clause while we will have to go back to the provinces. And that is the proposal that I would like to make, and all other affected stakeholders, because this has got severe economic implications. I mean, I see that the department says here at the bottom of, I think it's page 13, no substantial cost implications expected by introducing GMO labelling, as the bill does not prescribe how labelling should be done. I don't think the cost implications lies within the labelling section. I mean, that's a label that needs to be printed. The cost implications has to do with the research and the tests and everything that has got to do with GMO labelling. The test that has to establish what specific ingredients are in a product. So to say that they will, I think this is maybe I'm wrong, but this is very simplistically put, to say that there will be no cost implications. And if you look at the preamble of this bill, it says that in the preamble it says the people of South Africa recognize that the apartheid and discriminatory laws of the past that burdened the nation with unacceptable high levels of poverty, illiteracy, and other forms of social and economic inequality. We are still trying to address those issues, even if we are, you know, a great deal has been done, but there's still people that experience and live below the breadline. So I think proper consultation on this specific issue is needed, because it will increase the cost of certain foodstuffs, and we can't simply go on a line that says no substantial cost implications expected. Proper consultation should take place. And while we must go back to the provinces, I would really ask the department to see to it that they consult with the Department of Health and the Department of Agriculture and the whole agricultural sector on this issue.
Thank you very much. Perhaps we need to go back to that point she raised earlier, to which our law advisor, our state law advisor, am I correct? Parliamentary law advisor responded to. I think we will all agree that this bill is tagged section 76, thereby implying the competence of the provinces to be drawn in also. And The way we do it usually, evening, members send back the whole week discussing the relevant committees and so on and so forth, right? Now, at the introduction level, I think that has been done. But now, because of the amendments coming in, and having as the committee now seated here to look at those amendments that are bringing about substantive, I mean, affecting the substantive content of the bill, the element, as Honorable de Blanc is indicating, of having the provinces also brought in to make an input, I think there's no one who quarrels over that. Can we agree? Thank you. Then the input made by our parliamentary advisor has talked of the fax issue or the email issue. The email, which then tells the paper form in the context of the electric, whatever we're talking about, while the original involvement of the provinces is a physical one, face to face discussion and having possibly the public hearings after that. You understand? Now, in this connection, these very amendments we're talking about, what form of provincial involvement should be brought in? Do we have members going back? Do we invite a committee to be involved in the input by having this, reaching them, or we invite them to be part and parcel of the debate only? We need to be clear with that when we send it back, everybody must understand what it is we are saying. You have your hand up then from the Honorable Colwene, Honorable Temba, and Honorable Douglas.
Thanks, Chairperson. As there are some substantive changes, I think it's not proper only for the committee, the provincial committee system, for us to go and deal with it again, specifically on that one session 24 clause. I think we should do it properly. We don't want to be challenged anyway because we didn't follow procedure, and I mean that happened in the past. So that's my proposal, would be that we do it the proper way. That we go back, not only invite them to the debate, because then it's a fait accompli. We must get proper mandates again for the amendments.
Like we did originally. Yeah. Okay? The second is, did they say the second is Honorable Colwene? Yes. And from the member?
I understand what my colleague is saying. With me, I thought sending these amendments for the provinces to have the right of one. To me, that was fine. Looking at the time factor as well, I don't think it would be possible to run over the one of the hearings. We have been together with provinces engaged in this. For me, that is
suffice. It's important that we all speak out on this, because the moment we decide, we want to be able to say that members will so think. So it will go wrong. It must not be, the chairperson put things down our throats, or honorable digestive, or all the branches already there. We so think before, but all wrong. Anything that has to be said, it must be all of us.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think all we understand that the section 76 definitely should go to provinces must know. Yes, I agree, time is a problem, but I still feel that even if the time is against us, but definitely the Russian people, we must go and explain to the provinces. Yes, we did go on this, but the NA realized again that there were some things that were not incorporated in the bill, so they felt that it's important and necessary. So can we find out when is the bill scheduled to be through the House so that we know when can we go to provinces to
There are two issues that have come our way in terms of trying to stick to the correct procedure. Honorable Trevor wanted some information, and you are looking for the direction in which this could be brought to the attention of the provinces, whether to do it in more ways. But perhaps before that, because there are two issues today, I would invite the state law advisor in terms of the procedural methodology. I don't think we have a problem with the province. To have the province is living in food. But the methodology they have are to go there as two voices indicated that we need two. And then one voice said, but then we need to look at it from the possible legal implication of either way. It makes sense. Because we need to be clear what it is we want to do, and then we'll find that we're doing. If it happens to be not correct, all of us must be in the same port if it goes on. But I thought, because there are two issues that still need to be followed from both of you plus other Douglas. But if we don't have that sorted out, definitely we'll come back to you. Unless that is what members are suggesting. I'm suggesting that we will leave it for now and come back to you. Because definitely the legal expert people's view will help us to cut it out, and then we look at other issues which might be more administrative as far as that. Okay. Honorable Sir Blunt and Honorable Tim. Will you? Okay. That doesn't matter. Honorable Seva and Honorable Tim. It's okay for the sake of problem.
Thank you. I want to add that we are going to need negotiating mandate, and then after negotiating mandate, then we are going to have a follow-up on the final mandate, because we can't just go on to the province and then agree that after briefing the provinces, then they agree. They are still going to meet. I mean, the procedure that we do every time with Section 76, going to happen, going to meet the negotiating mandate, then the final negotiating mandate.
Thanks. I just want to say I agree with Honorable Temba and Honorable Douglas, but I disagree with Honorable Kumeni. Because at that time is the issue. We can't just force legislation through because of time constraints. That's not fair. I mean, this is a good piece of legislation, and it has taken a long time to get to this point, to now just rush things through, to say, for what? I mean, it's not fair. It's not fair to the consumers, and it's not fair to the provinces, and it actually affects our mandate. Our mandate is, at this council of provinces, to look at local and provincial interests. If we don't do that, then what are we there for?
I'm not right, I'm just a writer. I only want us to indicate perhaps to the members that mindful of the facilities that have been introduced, facilities for video conferencing facilities that have been introduced. Perhaps that could be one way of looking into a better way of
You know why I invited the state law experts to what I chose to call procedural methodology. That way, that's the one I use in the case. Because we need to show as to what we are saying, we have looked at all that is possible in line with what we ought to do as per provision of the Constitution and see how much can we get done within A, B, C, D, time. That's what I use that word, but it might be too loose, but that's what I wanted us to exactly get advice on the part of the social expert, so that we do not do things in a manner that will prolong or hasten, but we are not violating any crucial provision. Do I make sense? Perhaps before I invite any, I would like to hear the people who deal with law on the issue I requested. Thank you. I thought you had your hand first. He comes in at my request. Can we give you a chance first? Sorry. Come first and then you will come in. Are you coming to talk to me? To ask? Oh, about this?
Yeah.
No, perhaps you can come with something miraculous. All right, let's allow the state experts to have a word or two, then we'll come. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, we would like to make sure that we've been clear to the committee. Chair, Mr. Hercules has taken the liberty to pop out of this meeting so that we can very pertinently reflect on something. May I please seek your permission that when Mr. Hercules comes back, that maybe we convey something in that regard. But in the meantime, Chair, and this is not an answer to the real issue that has been raised, but maybe just for the sake of our own picture. My inclination is, yes indeed, this is a Section 76 bill, and that the legislative procedures pertaining to the provincial cycle should then be applicable, and that at least there should be maybe a voting mandate on the part of the provinces in respect of these amendments. But I can't say that with the necessary authority, Chair. Hopefully we can do so just a bit later. But please allow me just to refer to something else, Chair. As in respect of the whole legislative proceed in respect of this bill, this bill was introduced in the NCLP. It was initially considered by this honourable committee. Amendments were effected to that bill by this committee, and then it went to the portfolio committee. Once again, they effected amendments, and it is now those amendments that are serving before this committee. From my reading, my colleagues will interrupt me if they do not agree, but as far as the rest of the process is concerned, if for instance there would be now disagreement in the provinces, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't be the case, but just clearly to reflect on the process. If there would be a dispute in the provinces as to some of these amendments, the constitutional procedure for further dealing with this bill in Section 76 does not make provision for any further amendments to be effected to this bill by this honourable committee or by the other committee for that matter. It says that, and if I may read this little portion here, Chair,
if the Assembly rejects the bill, which is not applicable, or if the Council, which is applicable now, refuses to pass an amended bill, refer to it in terms of paragraph 2, the bill and, where applicable, also the amended bill, must be, so there's no discretion, it must be referred to the Mediation Committee. So, as far as the process is concerned, I'm just saying that from a broad perspective, there would be, with respect, no further provision in this Honourable Committee to effect amendments. Should there be disagreement coming from the provinces or within this committee, that's the end of the line. The next legislative step would be mediation.
Thank you very much for that part. We have one of our colleagues here who needs to advise us on something that is going to impact on the very issues we are deliberating. Honourable Suleiman?
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. The gentleman, I think, has captured it very well. It is indeed so that these proposed amendments must go to the province, but there's no need for members to go and brief the committees of the province. It can be done by way of writing a letter informing them about these proposed amendments from the NA, and then with the legislature, and then either reject or accept those proposed amendments. And if they do accept those amendments, then the bill will go through. But if they do reject the bill, then it will have to go through mediation. But Chair, we don't have to go through that 6-week cycle. It's either a yes or a no for this time around. So the committee must just try to work out this problem when they'd like to find an answer.
Thank you very much, Honourable Suleiman. You came at the very right time and you were very good. Oh, before you, Honourable Tebrang, you have something.
Yes, I would just like then to ask whether the department is going to comment on the question raised, whether they actually consulted the Department of Agriculture on this section 24, this point 6 that they are inserting.
Thank you. Perhaps in the same note, we might request them as well to respond. We might request the department to respond to the issues raised by Honourable Temba towards the contribution the last time before we talked of this, what I called methodology. So she raised issues in terms of when or how, I don't remember, in terms of these, I think, to be at the output. So that we have an overview and perhaps we might be able to have some specifics on the issues now raised by Honourable Temba. Ma'am, can we invite you to come in? Not you in person, but the department.
Okay, can I be excused now?
As long as you don't take the minute, you know, that's okay. Sorry, perhaps we might do well to get something from our secretary. Can you just say what you were saying to me?
The debate on this bulletin provisionally in the EPOP for the 23rd of October.
Okay. The department on the issue raised by Honourable Ted Blanche, perhaps even DCP or something more or different to say. Thank you.
I'd like to have an opportunity to express to have a discussion with my team with you, and so that we can give you a response on the issues that are taken.
Thank you very much. I don't think we have a problem with that, do we? Thank you. How much time do you need, ma'am? 5, 6 minutes, 10, or 5 minutes? So I adjourn for 5 minutes and then the other will come.
On the constitution issue, just to emphasize that if you see at the back of this year, it shows that the Department of Health is already included in terms of the department that we consult. The department that is not shown there is the Department of Agriculture. And as the DDG has mentioned, that department we have consulted. And I'm saying that with certainty because in the second draft of the CHA, we had provisions.
of creative industries at the Department of Agriculture were removed from the provision. Now, when we introduced this bill into Parliament in May, it did not have the GMO label. I think that background is very important. And also to emphasize that the reason why we removed it in the first place, it was because of the consultations we had with the Department of Agriculture. We then removed it. And maybe it is important now to mention why in the first place we thought maybe let's remove the GMO label. Through our discussion with the Department of Agriculture, the issue there that seemed to be the sticking point was the issue of safety, that we cannot pronounce on the issue of safety, because people were calling for the GMO labeling. They had in their mind that GMO labeling might not be safe for consumers to consume. So there was an issue of safety there. And we have said, as the Department of Trade and Industry, that we would not want to get involved in pronouncing on the safety of GMO. There's a specific legislation that deals with GMO. So in that respect, relating to safety or not, that we will not get involved. Now, we've said now that there's another aspect to the point, which is to provide consumers with an opportunity to choose. That's to inform consumers that this product, it contains GMO. Label it, just inform consumers so that they can decide whether or not they must buy it. Tell them that information is important. So we're taking it from that perspective, not to pronounce on the safety of the GMOs, but just to say it is fair to consumers, consumers must exercise their choice, tell them, put a label. We're not prescribing how that labeling should be done or what are the costs involved there. You can do it in a very cost-effective way, just tell them that it contains GMO. That is what the provision is to do. And just to say, again, to mention that when this bill was introduced in this committee, I think it was in this committee for a period of 3 months, from June, July, until it was adopted on the 6th of August in this committee. If you look at the submissions, I think there are about approximately 500 submissions received by this committee through the public hearing process or through the public submission. About 60%, I might be underestimating that. About 60% of those submissions, and you can check with the research unit of Parliament, in the service, they gave us a summary of those, and including the supporting documents. 60% of the submissions at that time, they called for the GMO. And subsequent to that process, when they were in this committee, there was another process at the portfolio committee. It was not the department, and I need to clarify that and emphasize that it was not the department that introduced the GMOs or called for the GMOs. It was through a public process. There were stakeholders that made representations, and they were listened to. And as the department, were then asked to consider concerns that were raised by stakeholders relating to the GMOs. It is only then, as the department, we clarified our position, and we mentioned that we have had discussions with the Department of Agriculture, and we said, in principle, as the department, we do not have a problem in legislating for labeling of GMOs. I think that is important from our side, just to clarify how the GMO labeling got into the amended bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Richard. I think matters have now cleared up. In terms of what Honorable Suleiman told us, I think we now begin to be at peace with ourselves. But then, as the Chair, I need something to enable me to go forward. One, if we have not yet the element of Section 26 in terms of the procedure as provided for in the Constitution, the next thing we're going to say, clause 1, clause 4, clause 10, clause 1, right? That. But because there is this element of the problem, can we still do that now? Don't tell you how. Now I can hear members are talking, but I can't get exactly what it is they're saying. And the right, honorable, not the blind this time, honorable Tell.
Thank you, Chairperson. As
before we even debated this issue, we should have got information from the Secretary of the Committee that provinces have already been informed, and three provinces are now discussing. We couldn't even have, say a lot of this. We were going to say let's wait for other provinces to finalize with the help of yourself to make them hurry. Yourself and the chairperson with the speaker, with the speakers of different provinces, because there is a line of communication protocol. So definitely, IWLA should have informed you even before this meeting that there is 1, 2, 3. You see, so we just knocked our heads on the table for nothing. But after Suleiman also has explained, I think we are now clear of what is happening, and the extension of the passing of this bill in the MCOP for the 11th gives us time to wait, but we can't today go clause by clause before we get the responses from the province.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. But then in the process of getting this cloud clearing, we asked people to go to different areas for consultations, and the standing in secretary did go somewhere to get some information which I think will be important for this gathering. Now, because I was so much deep in the methodology part of it, I was requested just to very clearly, briefly give us the information she had on that from here. We be in the know what to expect from tomorrow in relation to the Queen. Madam Chairman?
Thank you, Chairperson. We just found out that some of the provinces will only be meeting next week on their voting mandate. And next week, the debate was scheduled for next week. But Mr. Suleiman has spoken to provincial people, and they have now moved the date for the debate on the 11th of November. So it was proposed that we give provinces until next Friday to get the voting mandate to the committee, because the week after that is constituency, and we are going to take in parliament to the people. We also suggested that the committee meet at taking parliament to the people, maybe for half an hour, so to consider the mandate, and then we'll then report back to the NCOP, and then the debate will be scheduled for the end of November.
I think we do have issues today. It speaks for itself. Very good.
So, this is my definite check. So, then in the issue guide, we were going to close by close and then raise objections to all agree to certain clauses. Thank you.
In terms of
the problem, thank you.
Definitely. I mean,
if I can just ask Shireen also if she can just do you have a list of which provinces are meeting when? If you do, you don't have to read it out now. You can just email it to me. Thank you.
If she doesn't have it, she may very well try to find out. Mm-hmm. One person says it is not those who do not make mistakes that are meeting. They are not such people, they will never be there. But those ones whose mistakes are very quick and easy to correct. I didn't tell you that is what they are. Now, the next one is an announcement. That announcement is to say, we have lost. Yes. All you think of have been. We need to wait for it. No, we need just we might put it out while we're here. Ladies and gentlemen, a very big thank you for all what you have done individually and collectively. You make this community very effective, and you have a particular way of being here. Thank you so much. We are going to have that. Let's
go and have a bite at all the assembly. Chosnok will meet to deal with the radio wage amendment bill in terms of members. Otherwise, a very big statement is
One bench thing that you drop the stick to the second. Thank you. nuclear waste.
Radioactive waste disposal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, PMG.
Thank you.
I can phone my secretary. Should give his email address. I'm not too sure what it's like now. Is it?
Thank you very much again.
Gracias. Gracias.